Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. This is your host, Eric Fisher. This is the show where we talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm privileged with talking to one of my productivity heroes, David Sparks, Mac Sparky. He's a full-time lawyer, and yet somehow finds the time to also have a life, co-host the Mac Power Users podcast, and blog about Macs and productivity over at MacSparky.com. David and I talk about his new book from his Mac Sparky Field Guides series called Email. We talk about why he published it on the iBooks platform, talk a bit about the email problem, publishing on the iBooks platform versus the Kindle platform, and a quick tangent about the iPad Mini with Retina versus the iPad Air. A quick note, there were some Skype issues early during the call where it seems as if he and I are kind of talking over each other, but that was really just due to Skype having issues. He and I weren't trying to, you know, cut each other off. It's just that there was a bit of a hard time with each of us hearing each other back and forth, but we fixed that issue, and I just wanted to make sure to note that, though, because it almost, in listening back to it, sounded like he and I were arguing over each other's voices, and it was definitely not the case. Before we get into the conversation, just wanted to let you know that this episode is brought to you by audiobooks.com. As a listener of Beyond the To-Do List, you can go to audiobooks.com/to-do and get your first audiobook free. What's awesome about audiobooks.com is they've got over 40,000 audiobook titles, from bestsellers and new releases to classic favorites. And what's great is if you download the audiobooks.com app to your Apple or Android device, you can listen offline or stream to those devices instantly, or go back and forth between the desktop and the app experience, never losing your place in your book. Again, if you sign up today, you get any audiobook for free. And if you become a member, you get one audiobook per month plus 33% off each additional title. Another cool feature of audiobooks.com is that you can preview as many books as you like, even before you sign up. Thanks to audiobooks.com for supporting Beyond the To-Do List. Make sure to take advantage of their offer by going to audiobooks.com/to-do to get your first audiobook for free. Well, this week, my guest is Mac Sparky. It's David Sparks. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks, Eric. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I think people can probably deduce from the username that you use pretty commonly, Mac Sparky, that you are a Mac person. Is that correct?
Yeah, they had me back in 1980, whatever. I guess it was 84. I started using a Mac. So,
do you consider yourself a fanboy?
Not really. I mean, if you listen to our podcast, I'll take Apple on if I think they're making mistakes, like failing to put up better cloud services or something like that.
Yeah.
But I also am an enthusiast. I do like the stuff they make because I'm all about getting my work done. And I found in over the years that the Apple ecosystem allows me to do that.
Some people say, well, I'm a Mac fanboy, but I tell them, no, I just use what I've found works best for me.
Yeah.
And no, if something else works best for you, do that.
And if Apple started to, you know, take their eye off the ball and somebody else came up with something better, then I would not hesitate.
At what point did you get interested in productivity? Like, were you aware that it exists, this whole, you know, field of people talking about it, working on it, doing stuff with it? When did you become aware of that? When did you get tied into that?
This is my 20th year of practicing law this month, and it was very shortly after I started that I realized I was out of my league because there was just so much going on. And this is even before email was a thing, and I needed a way to track. I had a million thoughts going in my head, and I would go home at night and lay in bed and look at the ceiling. I'll never forget it. For like the first year of practice, the ceiling of my apartment was what I saw every night because there was just so much going on. I was so worried I was going to blow something and, you know, do it wrong, or, you know, and these are people's lives I'm trying to help. And I would wake up and start writing things down, and that kind of just evolved for me. I mean, even going back before that, I've always been a list guy, but it was always manageable. When I was in law school, I would have my list was a napkin. Every day, in the morning, I'd wake up, I'd have a cup of tea, I'd write down a few things on a napkin, and I'd stick it in my pocket. And as I went through the day, I'd open, pull out the napkin, and I'd check it off. And at night, I would use it with my dinner and throw it away. And it was a great system. but my life was a lot simpler. Then I get practicing law, and all of a sudden, just like stuff is coming at me from every direction. And you know, I did litigation, a lot of litigation in those days. So there's all these deadlines, and you know, every day you are walking through a minefield of potential mistakes, you know, devastating mistakes. So I had to get organized. And lawyers, frankly, aren't that organized. I don't know how they do it. You know, so many of them don't really have a plan or a system. So I started studying, and I think I'm rambling on.
No, what I hear you saying is you realized out of maybe covering your own weaknesses or paranoia or just necessity, you had to up your game. And so you sought out to do that basically, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically
the first real organized. Yeah, that's it. I mean, and I started making lists, and I started making these. I had a calendar on my desk, and I had all these notes on it. And I just, you know, I had all these like failed attempts. One of the reasons why I think I like to talk about it now is because I have literally made every mistake in the book. I've had multiple calendars. I've had multiple lists. I've had lists that go in your pocket and get washed in. You don't know what's going to happen to them because you can't read them anymore. And you name it, I've done it. But the first organized system I found myself into was the Franklin system. The Franklin Planner.
Yeah, I think that's a place a lot of people started with.
That was Hiram Smith, I believe, was the guy that was behind it. It was before they merged with Covey. But yeah. I did read the Covey books back in the day, too. But there was a Franklin store. I live in Orange County, California. There's a Franklin store up in, I think it was Costa Mesa at the time. And I would drive over there every year, and I'd buy another set of fillers. And that really helped me because it gave me the ability to plan forward. And like I could say, okay, I know this is going to be due in 2 weeks. So in 1 week, I would go to 1 week and I'd write down, you know, write this brief or whatever it was that I needed to do. And then when I looked at the ceiling at night, that was one less thing on my mind. And I just started, you know, ticking off those things using the Franklin Planner system. And eventually I was able to, you know, actually close my eyes and go to sleep. And I used that for years. So that's how I got started on the whole productivity thing.
So you were doing the whole empty your mental RAM thing well before David Allen even wrote or had GTD out there.
Yeah, you know, don't you think in a lot of ways that productivity stuff, a lot of it's all been said. You know,
I wholeheartedly agree. Stop listening to the show right now. No, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's the basics that we cover, and yet we still all keep finding ways to talk about it. I think because people forget or just choose not to implement things, and I think there's evolving too. But
yeah, also, I mean, well, our lives are changing, and you know now. How do you think about this stuff in the context of someone who gets 1,000 emails,
right,
or you know, or just even the word context? I think David Allen's one of the great things about GTD that opened my eyes was planning tasks not around priorities but around context, and that's something I had never heard before. Maybe somebody else said it. I don't know, but it really, the way he said it resonated with me. And you know, I guess I'm jumping forward at this point, but for a long time I had prioritized task list, and every day I went through it, and quite often the next day I ended up writing many of the same things down that I had done before. But I was smart enough to realize I wasn't going to, if I didn't do X, Y, and Z yesterday, maybe tomorrow I'm not even going to try to do Z, and I'll push Z out to next month, and I would turn forward in my planner and write it down when I was going to do it. And that was a very useful feature for me. And I had a nice leather, I thought I was really clever, I had a leather binder for it. And I had it all figured out.
And what year was that?
That would be early 90s.
Yeah.
You know, probably around 95 or so.
So
and for
you
years,
know.
I kept those binders. I finally threw them away. I opened them. I was cleaning out one day, and I found all those binders. I was looking at it, and I looked at all the stuff that I would write down and how much of it I actually got done that day. And it just made me sad. I was the ultimate optimist. Every day, I'd write down 20 things, and every day, I'd do 4.
Oh, wow. So 20 years later... And we've gone almost all digital. Do you do any paper
still doing
stuff
the same
still?
Thing.
I know.
No.
You're paperless. I should.
Well, I guess I should revise that. I do, and for a long time, I carried these field notes in my pocket, and or some kind of paper, and it made sense to stop and write things down on it. But even that has kind of gone away for me because there's some new technologies. There's an app on the iPhone in particular called Drafts, mm-hmm, that you just push one button and you've got a text field. And I use the Siri dictation all the time. So I'll just dictate a note into it, and then I've got it written down. And, you know, once it's written down, I'm okay. And writing it down digitally is even better because it doesn't get lost. I do, however, carry note cards in my pocket. Just leaning over to get them now. I bought them from, I don't know who I bought them from. It was one of our nerd friends. And they're, I don't think it was Mike Vardy, but someone in that vein. And then they made their own note cards. It might have been Aaron Mankey, but I'm not sure. But they've got nice grids on them. And so I carry those in my pocket all the time, and I give them away. You know, when someone asks me a question, I'll write down. It could be a phone number and a name, or it could be a diagram of how I want something done, but I do carry those. That's the only paper left.
Is it easier to do that than to like say, here, I'm typing it down and then I'm emailing it to you? Yes. Or texting it to you? It's that is it, does it have also maybe the added benefit of it's more personal that way? Because it's a tangible thing.
Well, that is an added benefit, but I think visually, I mean, like for instance, I constantly use mind maps and I constantly diagram things, and so when I sit down with somebody, I can write almost any concept visually, and when I'm sharing with the person, especially like a client or a coworker, I find, you know, I just give it to them once I'm done explaining what I'm up to, and they can take it with them, and maybe they throw it in the trash or whatever. But that works for me. And the reason I moved to the note cards is because I found that I was, especially as I started using Drafts on the iPhone, that all I did with the field notes was I wrote something down and I tore out the page and gave it to them, which feels really great, you know, tearing out of a book. You know, it's like it's so dirty. You know, you're tearing a page out. But the at the end of the day, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to just use note cards. That just makes more sense for this. So I've always got a pocket full of note cards, and I'm ready to whip out my pen and make a diagram of something. But that largely, I'm, Eric, just all digital.
Yeah, I like that. I like that it's a really good exception to the rule, but that you still got – do you feel like – it's more secure to have everything all digital and backed up. I mean, you guys have talked.
Yes, absolutely.
On the podcast Mac Power Users, which I guess I haven't mentioned yet, the Mac Power Users podcast, that you've had dedicated shows to backing up your data and everything. So
yeah, it's just so important, because once you start depositing your life into ones and zeros, you have to have a good backup system. But I do, and I found that, you know, writing tasks on a page in my field notes was very quick, but then at the end of the day, I had to go and process that and get that into the system. So that was an extra bit of time. And the notes I would take would be scribbled, and they weren't as good as the notes I get digitally. And so it's more legible. It's easier. And with the Drafts app, there's no, number one, there's no loss of time upfront. And number two, I don't have to have that extra step of translating the analog into the digital on the back end.
And then you're not capturing things for yourself that way with these note cards, are you? You're still, it's more
no
capturing it in the moment to hand off right then and there to somebody else, right?
Largely. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm on the telephone with someone, like I will use a note card for myself to take some notes, and then I'll immediately capture it afterwards. Okay. But if it just depends on the context. If I'm at my office, I can open up a there's a little app for the Mac that's called Unclutter, and it just drops down from the top of your screen, and it's got a list of files you've recently worked on. It's got a clipboard, and it's got a notes field. So I can get to that with one mouse flick, no matter where I'm at on my Mac. So if I'm on the phone with you and Eric says, well, I want to do a podcast on such and such a date and blah, 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 I'll write down some notes. I'll just type them as we're talking. And then when I'm done, I have a system where that goes into, where I can save that information. So in that case, I would always go all digital. But if you and I are having coffee and you tell me some notes you want me to make for doing the podcast, I'm not going to get out my phone and start typing in front of you. It just feels weird to me. And I want to look at you in the eye and not look at my thumbs the whole time. So I'll take out a notepad and scratch something down for myself in that instance. This is really detailed. I'm going to put your listeners to sleep.
No. This is totally up the alley of my listeners, because, I mean, we've talked to people about unplugging and all that kind of stuff. I love that you're talking about this in terms of the relationship aspect of it. You know what I mean? Like the fact that this is where the productivity meets the rubber meets the road, is you're sitting down having coffee with somebody and you're not whipping out your phone and typing stuff down. You're still staying in the relationship or in the give and take instead of checking your phone and all that kind of stuff. So I love it.
That's one of the things I really loved about the iPad, because I was very hesitant to bring a laptop into a meeting with somebody, because it literally builds a wall between you and the person across
yes.
the table.
Yes.
And I've been on the other side of that wall, and I wonder, are they checking Facebook? You know, what are they doing? Whereas the iPad, you lay it on the table, and they can see that you're looking at the thing that's relevant to what you're discussing. And that's a much more intimate experience for me.
So let's go off on a quick tangent on the iPads then, because there's been the whole I've been following you and Jason Snell and a couple others talking about the iPad Air and the iPad Mini with Retina. And where did you land?
I ended up with an iPad Air.
Okay.
And the reason is, first of all, the iPad Mini is so sexy. I mean, you know, that Retina screen and that little device that, you know, I was just telling Katie Floyd, I said, if I had a purse, I'd get a Mini because it'd be with me all the time. But the fact is I don't. When I want to go out and bring an iPad, it goes in my briefcase or my day bag or whatever. So bringing the Mini or the iPad Air wouldn't matter to me. The bag is big enough to hold either. And the really thing that drove me was there's some things I just do that I need the larger screen for. And where there's some things I do where it would be much nicer to have a smaller screen. But the need outweighs the desire. And like I do a lot of work with PDFs as a lawyer. You know, we read a lot. And I annotate PDFs. And I tried to do it on an iPad Mini first generation, and it just wasn't satisfactory. The bigger screen makes it a lot easier.
Somebody asked me, they said, so iPad Mini or iPad Air? And I said, both.
I'm tempted to tell you the truth.
So then you've got other people that, you know, like Jason, he's like reading comics, and I think he landed on the side of the iPad Mini. And I'm curious as to why, but I think it really just comes down to because they're so close in terms of technology. It's now like the guts are basically the same. It's just
it's
screen size. So it's really what is it you're going to use it for? Is it a true consumption device? I mean, I'm not going to even go the whole route of obviously we can get work done really well on iPads, whatever size they are. It's more what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I think I told a friend, I said, what's going to make you more crazy? Carrying around the bigger device or working with the smaller screen?
Yeah, that really is
whatever's
going to
make you more crazy. If you really want to have it with you all the time, and you like if you carry a purse and you want to have it with you all the time, but you're not going to get an iPad Air in your purse without carrying a much bigger purse. Well, then obviously go with a Mini. But if you really like watching movies and having the bigger screen, and every time you watch a movie on it, you're going to wish it was bigger, you know, then go with the Air. I don't know. To me, it came down to really the PDFs and like the mind maps and some of the stuff I do. I just prefer a bigger screen for that. So that's where I ended up.
Yeah.
But I know people that have bought both, and I am tempted. But I just there's too many other priorities in my life right now. But I understand why. I did keep my first generation Mini though, and I still use it. So
now, what are you using that for?
I kind of bang around the house with it. It's Wi-Fi only. So, but I live in Southern California, and it's really nice weather here for a good portion of the year. And I have a nice chair in the backyard. I have a little fish pond, and I love to go out and sit there and read and write and. I mean, I'll sit there and just use Siri dictation and work on the next field guide in the iPad Mini.
Nice. So created on the iPad for the iPad.
Yeah.
Basically. Well,
funny.
More than the iPad now. iBooks is everywhere. So
yeah.
What was the instigation for the field guides? Like, why did you decide, okay, there's a need for these field guides and I'm the one to do it?
I wrote some books for a big publisher, and that was a really good experience. And there was a lot of things to like about it, but it was also a good learning experience. And I felt like the limitations placed on a book that's going to be put in Barnes & Noble the cost was too high for me. You know, like I wanted to explain how to go paperless. And I said, well, you get 3,000 words and 10 screenshots. You know, because they got to pay for every page they print. And, you know, you can't make a 2,000-page book. And I wanted to do better, and I wanted to share video because, like, I'll never forget, I wanted to teach people once how to do what they call secure disk images. On the Mac, they have a built-in system where you can make a disk image that's got a password on it. So if you want to put your tax returns on your Mac, there's a built-in system. You don't have to buy an app. You can create this image, and it's got a password, and you drop your tax returns on it. Then you lock it up, and nobody can get into that without knowing that password. Well, teaching someone how to do that with screenshots is really difficult because there's all these checkboxes and there's all these steps and considerations. So I wanted to make something that could be interactive. And the only way to do that was to do it myself. I mean, there was other reasons too. Frankly, I wanted to own the material. You know, I didn't want to have an intermediary between me and the audience. I wanted to be able to say whatever I wanted to, you know, because my voice at Max Sparky is kind of whimsical. And, you know, publishing companies aren't really excited about whimsy in technology books.
Right.
So I went over. And also, frankly, there was a financial incentive because authors of tech books don't get paid well. You know, the percentage you get isn't very good. And why do I need this middleman? I mean, I've got my own audience. And you know, there was just a whole lot of reasons to do it. And then Apple came out with the iBooks author platform. And it was like heaven sent. It was perfect for what I was doing.
And I just read your article about why it made so much more sense to go with iBooks versus Amazon in terms of, you know, the data cost and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was a great reason. Plus, the Kindle really can't handle the multimedia richness that your field guides have done. And honestly, your field guides, if I can be flattering for a moment, those field guides are kind of a high standard in terms of what the iBooks platform really can be used for.
I push the envelope. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, you're talking text, images, audio, video, links. Am I missing something?
I don't know. There's the interactive images.
It's just awesome. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
one of the things people don't get about those is how much work it is. I mean, it is a remarkable amount of work to get the whole thing together. I mean, it's not just writing the book, but it's also doing the layout. And like, I'm essentially producing a feature length movie with each new book because there's about an hour and a half of video in the book.
Yeah.
So it's quite a bit of work. I say that, but it's a lot of fun putting it together. Oh, and then there's interviews. Now I've been doing interviews in the last few books.
Yeah. Today. How many hours of interviews are there in the new book?
You know, I should know the answer to that. I think it's about 2 hours. It's about 2 hours. There's 8 interviewees, and I think it ended up about 2 hours. So, which was a really fun thing to do, to say, okay, well, now you've heard me talk about email for an hour and a half of video and, you know, 40,000 words. Let's talk to a few others and see how they're doing it. Because email is such a weird problem. There's not one solution.
So let's get into the book a little bit. What is the email problem? I mean, why did you feel, other than maybe the fact that Merlin never did write that email book, why did you feel you had to write a book about email?
Yeah, I mean, I wish Merlin had written an email book.
I don't think
it would have changed whether I wrote one or not, but it sure would have been great to read. But either way, I just felt like email, I kind of hit a stumbling block myself with email, and it related around the success of the, you know, Max Sparky world, where I was getting so much email. And there's that part in me that wants to be the guy who answers the email. And then there's the part of me that has 2 kids that need my time and attention and a day job and a guy that would like to write another book someday. And I actually wrote about it in the book, how the moment that it hit me was when my daughter was building Lego, and we always build Lego together. And I said, well, let me just finish getting through this pile of email. And I did, and I looked up, and she was done. And I was like, well, that was lost. You know, that was one more moment that we could have had together that we never will. And at the same moment, I got an email from a reader complaining that I hadn't responded to her email for 6 days. And it was really kind of rude. She was saying how I need to take my address off the website because I don't take email seriously because I didn't respond to her problem in 6 days. And I was thinking, wow, you know, I just gave up a precious moment. And these people are angry with me because I'm not doing it fast enough. And, you know, that combined with, you know, what I was seeing in my day job, I felt like, you know, I need help with this. To me, that turned into a book. You know, I kind of made a journey over a course of a year exploring different email technologies. And when I started the book, I knew that there wasn't a single answer. So I wanted to write a book that kind of empowered people to make their own big boy decisions about how to deal with email.
You talk about that. You talk about, I mean, the written word and the written letter system that, you know, anybody younger than, I don't know, how old are you again?
I'm 45.
Okay.
So I guess I'm old in this game.
I guess you are. I'm 35. Yeah. And I even remember, you know, the whole pen pal thing. But my daughter, like, that's just not something that she would think to do. She's like almost – she'll be 9 soon. But although we make her do that, we kind of – I don't know. We're kind of Luddite in terms of the way the kids do stuff, other than when they use the iPad for fun. But there is something meaningful to that, and I think that's the thing, is people forget that, like you said, the email has the word mail in it, which means delayed communication. And I think we've kind of forgotten that, and we now expect it to be instant replies, and treating paragraphs and paragraphs of written, letter length communication instantly replied to within 5 minutes, and that's just not what it's meant for.
And I don't know how anybody gets anything done when they start thinking that way. It's just – it's a massive problem. And I think part of it is, for the older generation of us, the whole thought of someone sends you a letter, you open your mailbox, it's a special. It's precious. You know, it's a piece of written communication, and you feel like you need to respond to it. Now, you're not going to respond and mail it out 5 minutes later, but – you feel like it's something special, and I think I bring that over to email a little bit. That's one of my hang-ups. Just because someone writes me doesn't mean I have to write them back, but part of me still wants to do that every time.
You feel like there's somewhat of an obligation that they sent you something, and it wasn't just – it wasn't an advertisement. It wasn't spam.
Yeah.
It was a real person writing a real thing, and you feel like you owe them a response.
Well, also they're like – especially like on the – I'm going to set aside the law stuff, but just the geek side of my life, it's one of my people. It's someone like me, mm-hmm. It's an introverted geek that's, taking the time to reach out to me. And it's like, man, how privileged is that someone, because we have some great listeners and, doctors and just really smart people. And they want a little bit of my time. And how can I not respond? And it works to a certain degree. But then when you're getting 50 of those a day, what's going to happen if you think you can respond to each one of those the way you'd like? Well, you're going to give up some things. You're never going to make another Lego with your daughter. You're never going to write another book, And then that's where the rubber meets the road for me. And that's the thing I was struggling with through this book. And that's what I wanted the reader to come away with, is that you make judgments in the way you deal with email, and there is no single right or wrong judgment, but you need to at least be aware of the judgments you're making.
Yeah. You use that the never write another book, the example, who was it? The guy that wrote Charlotte's Web, is that right?
Yeah, E.B. White.
Yeah.
When I read that, it's like my head exploded.
That kind of blew my mind too. Yeah. The fact that he just – all the school kids were being encouraged to write letters to him, and – so then he was doing the obligatory, like, okay, kids are writing me. I don't want them to think that the guy who wrote Charlotte's Web is evil, so I'll write him back. And it's a different time then anyway. But that he just didn't get around to writing more books because of that. Just people wonder, is email work? There's a couple articles out there right now that I've read recently where they're asking the question, is email work? Why it is or why it isn't? And I'm just like, well, if you're spending time on it instead of other things, then yeah, it's at least sort of work. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it absolutely is something. But it's something that you don't have to do all the work. I mean, it's something that you have to look at like a grown up and decide where you draw lines. Mm-hmm. 'Cause some people will abuse email to the extent that you will let them, and they will never relent. I don't know if I put this in the book or not. I've talked about this in the past. I had a case years ago where the other lawyer was one of these email nuts, and he would send me these, novel size emails, and I would reply to him. And then 20 minutes later, I would get another novel. And it was like the guy was sitting there waiting for me to reply. And if I replied, he'd immediately reply again. And these would come on Sunday afternoon at 7 o'clock or any time of the day. I don't know what the guy was doing. And in the legal profession, sometimes you have what they call conflicts, where you can't continue in a case because there's a new party and it's been represented by your firm or something. But we had a conflict, so I had to step out of the case. And the new lawyer came in, and I said, hey, be warned, this guy is an email guy, And the way I had solved the problem with him was I just started printing them out. Because even if I didn't respond, I'd still get two or three a day. And I would just print them out, and I collected them in a little manila folder on my desk. And every two or three days, I would dictate a response to him. To at that point, it would be 10 or 11 emails. And it would be a short response, but I would have my secretary put it on paper, and I'd sign it, and I'd lick a stamp, and I'd mail it to him. And my whole idea of it was to slow down the intensity of what he was trying to do, because the guy was trying to create emergencies where they did not exist. And so I would mail these letters to him every few days, and I know it had to make him just completely nuts. But so the new lawyer came in, and I told him about it, and then he called me a few days ago. He says, "Dave, we had like 50 email exchanges in one day." And I said, "Well, that's your fault."
Yeah.
You know, well, if you reply.
That's kind of so that's an interesting thing. Like, say somebody's read your book. They've worked through like what their workflow is, and they've decided this is how I'm going to do email. How do you then kind of train others to know how or you know, to deal with your expectations of yourself? You know what I mean? Like, how do you evangelize them to your way of doing it, or at least deal with them doing it differently?
I think you just do it. I mean, the more I think about this, you know, sending out a big announcement saying, "Hey, everybody, I check my email every day at 5 p.m., so don't expect an early response." I think it's kind of douchey, you know. but I think if you just don't reply till 5 o'clock, people are going to get used to that. And there's going to be a few outliers, and you're going to get a phone call from somebody saying, "Hey, what's going on?" In fact, I had a really funny exchange with somebody, and I put it in the book. But, you know, people are going to call you and say, "How come you didn't reply to my email?" And I'll say, "Well, when did you send it?" "Well, I sent it 10 minutes ago." You know, I'm like, "Well, do you think I might do other things than watch my email inbox all day?" You know, and I tell them, I've told this to clients, I've told it to lawyers, I've told it to judges. I check my email in the morning and sometimes at lunch and usually in the afternoon. And if you need to get a hold of me in a faster method, then I suggest you call me. But if every 5 minutes of the day I stop and check my email, I will never get another thing done.
I think that's a good way to put it. Just you got to just do it. You know, you got to do it your way. And I think, yeah, dealing with – so for example, if I had a boss who – I maybe want to set up a system or set up a VIP notification or something just in case.
Yeah, you can do that.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's how you kind of get around it. It's like, okay, I am not checking my email because I'm actually working or doing other more important work, whatever, moving projects forward, really. Don't want to have to keep my email open and be interrupted constantly by that. So let me get around that by if these 3 to 5 VIPs that rarely email me, but when they do, it's like I need to know immediately. Then you turn those on, or you set those up, and you have them ding you on your phone or your iPad or whatever. And that's
a very mature way to deal with it. Another thing is to have a conversation with those people, with your boss, and say, "Look, I really want to be very productive, and you know, if I feel like my job's in jeopardy if I don't respond to an email, that's not a good way for me to work, because now I'm completely freaked out that you're going to send me an email and I'm going to be busy doing something else for you and you're going to be unhappy with me. So, you know, can we have another way of communicating urgencies?"
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it depends. I mean, it's very easy for me to say that. And there's people out there who have jobs where they can't have that conversation, or maybe everything from their boss is an urgency. In that case, you're going to have to deal with it to a certain extent. But get as much of that stuff out of your life as possible.
Yeah.
Don't let everything become an urgency. I mean, people ask me sometimes, how do I keep a day job and still publish books and do the podcast? And the real secret to my success is, number one, is I cut out a lot of stuff in my life that is noise. And number two is I use technology to find big chunks of time where nothing will interrupt me. And that's the trick. You know, if you have 3 hours where you're not going to be checking email and Twitter and Facebook and whatever else distracts you, you'll be amazed how much you can get done.
Yeah, focus, having that time. So part of the email problem isn't necessarily that it's email's the problem. It's that it's people.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't that true with all this stuff?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's managing yourself, and it's trying to figure out how to quote unquote manage others, and or I should say relationships. That's probably a better way to put it.
Yeah.
So.
But people do figure that out about you. At this point, it's kind of a joke around my friends that like, oh, Dave, he's the guy who only checks his email once in a while. He's Mr. Fancy Pants, right? But they know it. And they know that if they email me, they don't expect an immediate response, and they don't get all torqued off if I don't reply in 5 minutes, because they know I'll get there.
So you've trained them over time by always responding, or at least usually responding, I should say.
Yeah.
So they know, okay, that's just how it is, and I don't need to be upset about it. I will get my answer.
Yeah, and they know that if they called me, and it's a period of time when I'm accepting calls, because frankly, there are times when I don't, then they'll get a hold of me. So I don't know. It works out for me. But everybody, that's the thing about email and all these things. Everybody's got different circumstances. And I don't want to be the man up on the hill saying, this is how you do it. But I do want to be the guy saying, it's a tough problem. And there's some great technologies that can help you slay the dragon.
Yeah. I think I really like the way that the book's laid out, is where you talk about the problem to begin with, and then you kind of move into, you know, all right, now here's a little bit deeper dive into it. Here, you even go into actually some of the email technology, which I think some people don't even realize what the difference is between, you know, POP or IMAP and all those things. What's the reason for putting that in there?
Because that helps. You know, if you understand how email works, then all of a sudden you know where some of the wires are and you can connect things yourself. And even if you're not geek inclined, I wrote it up in a way that anybody could understand it. And when you know the difference between POP and IMAP and Exchange and Gmail, then all of a sudden you have this, it's like empowering. It gives you the way to figure out ways to automatically filter mail and do these things. But you wouldn't understand if you didn't understand the, you know, the basic technology of the email. So I felt like that had to be there. It's funny, if you read the intro to that chapter, it's like I'm begging people. I said, even though you want to skip this chapter, please don't.
It's one of those things where I read through the book really quickly and decided, oh, there's a lot more here than I thought, because I kind of wanted to skip ahead to I said read the book. There's so much more than just reading in this book with all the tutorials and things. And it's interesting to have a book where you're kind of going through and it's like, oh, there's a video. And then to be like, oh, I can watch a video now. And it's definitely the future of like textbooks, that's for sure.
Yeah, I hope so.
I really hope so. Do you have so far in the series? And what's funny is I didn't even realize that the first one of the four was one of them because of the different cover.
Yeah.
The
Mac Tips.
The Mac Tips. Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually the second one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We because, put it in the series because it just made sense.
So, you know, so curiously enough, I'm looking at the Markdown and paperless. And now email, and you've got the blue and the gold, the green and the gold, and the red and the gold. And suddenly it hits me: why does that seem so familiar? It's because the special editions of the Lord of the Rings DVDs were those exact same colors.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, it kind of freaked me out. I'm like, wait a second. So the email one's kind of Return of the King, and I'm going to grab a picture and put it in the show notes of this so you can see the
yeah, I never knew that.
Compared to the screenshot of that, you'll see. So
the covers are actually done. I had a very clear idea of what I wanted for the cover on the first one. And Darren Rolfe, who's a graphic artist in the UK, helped me kind of bring it to life. And we use that again in Markdown. And with the email book, because the first two books I started with an Apple template and kind of diverged from it. But you can still see remnants of the Apple template. And I saw a book made with the same template, and it looked so similar to my book that it made me angry. You know, I don't want other books to look like my book. So I decided to do my own design, and I was going to hire a guy, but then I've always been fascinated with design elements. Like I do furniture and stuff like that. And I've always worked with the green and green and the stickly. I just love the craftsman look. And I decided to start fiddling to show somebody how I would like a craftsman design book. And then I liked the sample so much that I kept working and iterating on that, and I ended up doing the design myself. But now it's like a craftsman style. So I told Darren for the cover on this one, I wanted a craftsman border, and he found a great one. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Well, it looks great.
A little inside baseball. Yeah.
Just the look of it and the field guide, I mean, it just makes it feel like that, you know, the geeky productivity tangible stuff, you know, where people are into pens and notebooks and all that. It fits right in with that. So it's perfect.
One of the benefits of the iBooks author is I can control the typography and everything, especially for the landscape layout. So every word and every image is exactly where I wanted it. And I really obsess over it. I want it to be perfect. You know, I want people to have just a great experience with it. So I'm glad that you caught on that.
Yeah, and it's really cool to see Apple embrace it so much. The series, like, they've been promoting it, like tweeting it out and putting it
so
front
lucky.
And center in the iBooks. Like, geez, man.
I hear, you know, you hear about app developer and how they feel like, you know, they're treated, you know, poorly by the system. And I've had the exact opposite experience with the iBook store. I mean, I've actually met with some of them now, and they're so nice, and they care so much about making just like the best experience for users. And I don't know, I just, it's a love fest. I have so much respect for what they do, and I'm so appreciative of the support they've given me.
Yeah, well, and it helps their cause that you're creating such a, you know, cutting edge use, you know, example of what you can do with their technology they created for that platform. So
yeah,
it's really tempting me too. I have an ebook out on Kindle, and I'm like, I really want to go the iBooks route with something. So,
well, it's interesting because the people I know who publish on both tell me that, you know, the iBooks numbers are a fraction of what they do on Amazon. I mean, it's not clearly Amazon is the big dog in iBook in these electronic books sales. But I've never had any interest in dealing with it. And like I did in that post, I guess we don't need to restate it here, but they have download fees that would cripple me. Mm-hmm. Or I'd have to give them 65% of the sale. I mean, it just doesn't make sense for what I'm doing.
Yeah, plus the videos and, you know, all the other extras aren't included per se. You can still give them away, but they're not as connected to the document. So
yeah. I wanted people to be able to get on an airplane and experience my whole book. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's actually a great way to do it. Take 2 hours while you're on a flight with an iPad and this book, and just broaden your horizon in terms of how you can do better with email.
Yeah. Leave Boston clueless and land in LA a wizard.
Awesome. Well, let me ask you the question that I always ask, or mostly ask everybody, which in terms of, you talked about getting that time and that focus and, you know, uninterrupted time. I ask everybody, in an ideal world, how do you start your day?
Okay, so the hippie part hasn't ended. A meditation practice. I get up every day and do a mindfulness meditation, and I get up early. And I try and do a chunk of stuff in the morning. I guess, is David Allen the one who talked about the big rocks, or was that Covey? I forget.
I think
sure
both of them, actually.
Yeah, but, you know, the analogy of filling your day with the big rocks first, and whether it be something for the day job or something for a book, I love to get a couple hours in the morning, uninterrupted time, to just crank on something. And even on the weekends, I do that. And my house, you know, my wife and daughters, they may be sleeping in. I don't want to make a lot of noise. I may just take my iPad and a keyboard down to, you know, the Pete's Coffee and sit there for a couple hours. But I don't go there to check email or to fiddle with OmniFocus. I have something in mind, and I just do it. And just about every day I do something like that. If I were to give one tip to people, that would be it. You know, find those 2 hours. If you're a night person, do it at night. If you're a morning person, do it in the morning. But find a couple hours where you don't spend any time on the flotsam and jetsam of life, but just find something that you're trying to create and just create it.
Love it. That's great. So, David, I see our time is running down. I'd love to have you tell people, where can they find you online?
Yeah, the easiest place is maxsparky.com. So just go over there, and all of my books are there, and the podcast and all that stuff. So if you want to go to one place, if you want to just check out the podcast, you can go to macpowerusers.com.
I highly suggest everybody go do that. That's one of my go-to productivity podcasts. People ask me, what productivity podcast do you listen to? That's definitely one of them. And if you're not a Mac person, I guess you'll still get something out of it. But especially if you're a Mac person, obviously because of the name, you should check that out.
You'd be amazed how many non-Mac people listen to our show and end up Mac people. I get emails every day.
So if you're on the fence, definitely go check it out.
Yeah, if you're afraid you might end up spending thousands of dollars on new Macs and you're worried about that, then definitely don't listen to our show.
Well, David, thank you so much. It's been an awesome time talking with you.
Well, thank you, Eric, and I'm really appreciative of you and everything you've brought to the community with this great podcast. And I'm a listener, so thanks for bringing it to us.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks again to David Sparks for talking with us on this episode. Make sure to grab his awesome, I hesitate to almost call it a book because it's much more than that. It's a multimedia attack on your ignorance of email. It's audio, it's video, it's text, it's images, it's everything. Go grab that. You can go directly to it by going to beyondthetodolist.com/email. And make sure to go check out his site at MacSparky. That's MacSparky.com. And say thanks to David at MacSparky on Twitter. Let him know you were grateful for what he shared on this episode. If this is your first episode, make sure to go subscribe and listen to all the other great episodes we have in the back catalog. And if you'd like to show support for the show in iTunes, you can go to beyondthetodolist.com/iTunes. Give us a rating or a review or both. And don't forget to go to audiobooks.com/todo to grab your free audiobook from audiobooks.com. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next episode. Beyond the To-Do List is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx. Learn how to podcast. Theorize over the TV shows Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, and Under the Dome. Laugh with our clean comedy. Delve into science fiction and philosophy. Learn critical thinking from movie reviews. And more at noodle.mx.